Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the SummerSlam review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened at this weekend's SummerSlam premium live event. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, but AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett. Michael Sidgwick still enjoying some well-earned time off, and Hamflett is here with me to discuss what was a sensational SummerSlam.
Oh, my word. A really fantastic presentation of what WWE should do and should be, I think, is the best way I would describe this show. It was imperfect, and that's all right, because I think some of the lows were reminding you how high the highs could be. I think it wasn't one of them cards that... Well, here's the thing. So it wasn't one of them cards that was a perfect wrestling show, and I don't think we'll enter the conversations for pay-per-view of the year or premium live event of the year, and yet had peaks so high that I think a couple of things will definitely enter end-of-year list conversations.
Yeah.
We'll have matches and moments and promos and sections that will be discussed in December as like monumental parts of 2022's pro wrestling output. And that is kind of what WWE should exist to do. It's nearly impossible. It can be done, but it's nearly impossible for the way WWE produces content to knock out a pay-per-view of the year contender or a show of the year contender. But their currency remains in moments, big ones at that. And when you can combine moments with pretty great in-ring and odd little flashes of booking, of which I'm looking forward into getting granular about for a change on a WWE show, you have the makings of like what would be considered for them an elite tier event. And yes, the elite tier in WWE is often lower than the elite tier of pro wrestling in general. But they approach the best of what they do here at this. And that's why I think a lot of people were on such a high with it the next day. Because you go into WWE with such low expectations that it's not that hard for them to surpass them. And then when you're reminded of what they are the best at and what they can do better than just about anybody else, you remember why it's okay for them to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Too often, WWE doesn't let you know why WWE should even be around. I'll make the joke all the time. There's WWE and there's also a wrestling company.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm at peace with that, but a lot of people aren't. And a lot of people, like, the more the lines are blurred, the more that helps WWE, I guess. But I just thought this was everything. Somebody that, like, I've watched this 30-odd years and I cannot switch it off. And as somebody in that position, this is kind of what I want out of them, more than attempting to be something they're not.
Yeah, the Triple H era is well and truly here, in my opinion. And I thought if this had been the second night of WrestleMania that we went to, WrestleMania 38, I probably would have come back and gone, I think that's me, lads. I don't think I ever need to go to WrestleMania again because I've seen the best one there is.
Maybe they didn't themselves realize they were doing a second night of WrestleMania, and that explains why that show was mostly so poor. And instead, here it was. Like a one-night event. It clocked in at about 3.5 to 4 hours in a stadium. Maybe nobody told them that the second night of WrestleMania happened. I mean, I saw Pat McAfee's highlights and there was a pretty significant moment from that show missing that would lead me to believe that the second night of WrestleMania, that his second night didn't occur.
As we often say, not to make this about us, but we often say sometimes circumstances will colour our opinion of a show.
Mm-hmm.
So Sunday, I ended up watching this on Sunday. Saturday night, I was at a mate's 30th birthday party.
Yeah.
May have sent a voice note singing, "I don't think you're ready for this jelly."
I can't give people a timestamp, but that does appear on camera, on microphone, on the screen, because it popped me so much. It was a very antisocial thing to get my phone up. I thought, I had some Wilborn during the show. Maybe this is content. And mm-hmm. I think, it's Wilborn. It's always content.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think... was this the best Sunday ever? Because that technically was past midnight when I sent you that, and we were having this wild old time. Someone had rented out a house, and it had got a hot tub, mm-hmm. and it had got this massive garden, and it was for some reason under the flight path for Luton Airport, so I could get my little flight tracker out. Oh, that's going to Sofia. There you go.
This is the weirdest. Like, we're all nerds. That's why we work in this profession, and that's why we're talking to our fellow nerds. That listen, one of the nerdier quirks that you wouldn't expect Adam Wilborn to get a real kick out of, beyond the wrestling and beyond the Dungeons and Dragons that you also enjoy.
Yeah.
Every now and then, I will find myself at Wilborn's desk as he shows me the software that I don't really understand of planes coming into land and taking off. That in itself, it's like plane spotting, I guess.
Yeah.
Train spotting, but for planes.
But cool.
Well, this is me walking past the games workshop where people are playing Warhammer going, "Ah, nerds!" And then zipping my jacket up because I've got like a Diesel and Shawn Michaels t-shirt on or something. I got a mate, right, who's into another version of this.
Shout out to the guys behind Flight Radar 24, the app.
Oh my God. And the forums that you must have
visited. They haven't paid to sponsor this. I'm just a fan.
The forums that you must have visited when you were younger that were even filthier than wrestling ones for stuff like this.
Mate, this is a new thing for me. I've picked this up in the last 6 months.
Oh, right. This is not like a...
I've always been like what are these guys doing?
And
one of my best mates was just like, his house is near a flight thing. And he was like, "Oh, do you know that flight's going from blah, blah, blah to this place?" And I was like, "What? What's all this?
Is it now?" No, a mate of mine, and it's absolutely terrifying when it's happening at 70 miles an hour down a motorway, is bang into, from when he was younger, you're just tuning radios. Like, digital radios have been a nightmare for this hobby. But like tuning radios and trying to find, you know when you accidentally would stumble across like an international station?
Oh, yeah.
And you would go, I'm looking for 99693 because I want to listen to the 5 Live commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead I've like found something that's coming from Russia or something. That's the hobby. They actually want to find that stuff. And you tune it and you go back and forth. And like every now and then, like you'll catch a station from America, for example, and think of how difficult that is. Like the radio waves all over and he's driving out and like there's hot spots in the country. Weather can make a difference. Locations are particularly good. Washington Services in the Northeast is apparently a great spot because of its location, geographic drive. All this stuff. Do you know what the hobby is called?
What?
DXing. Which I feel like is like an appropriate segue back into the Triple H booked SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And indeed, as you talk about situational enjoyment of shows, I'd been like 200, 300 miles around the country on megabuses and at gigs and was tired and needed something that was like, if there was one thing that was going to energize me, I could do with it early on in the show to get me through the subsequent 4 hours. Triple H provided.
Yeah, exactly.
The game provided.
So I had this wild party on this Saturday night, Sunday drive back, a little bit hungover, a little bit sensitive. And then I'm like, "Oh, I've got loads of stuff we need to do, blah, blah, blah." And I put this on, and this show just rocked for 3.5 hours, I thought. And that finishes, literally, my tribal chief is there, holding his belts into the air. I'm like, "Oh, mate." I'm watching it, looking at him, after he's caught that mic and then winked at Brock Lesnar.
Oh, my God.
And then I go, "Right, that's another thing ticked off the list. What's next? Let's put the Lionesses on." Football comes home.
Yeah.
The penultimate episode of Love Island. The parents come in. Everything's great in the world.
Everything's coming up Will House.
And then I had to watch Rampage. No, we'll talk about that later. I'm joking, of course. But let's start at the beginning of this show, because the show opened with a legacy feud. Becky Lynch challenging Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship. And I kind of don't want to overlook the match, because I thought it was great, but it was all about what happened after the match, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's going to dominate a lot of my thoughts for weeks and weeks and weeks, so I'll try and isolate some comments on the match for this podcast where they're at least deserved and warranted. Another terrific Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, main stage, huge stadium match. There are certain wrestlers that have the chemistry for buildings like this, for events like this, for stages like this, and these are clearly two of those women. What I loved about the WrestleMania match was on display here in a different way, which was their ability to make... Can I say this? Because I'm going to just be full of compliments. I think I can. Make the sloppy look intended.
Mm-hmm.
They have a certain way about them where what would otherwise scan as a certain lack of chemistry or discipline feels more like a fight. They are constantly struggling with one another. Mm-hmm. It looks like, you know, you're in your MMA and your UFC, right? And one of the things that I really struggle with is how a counter game on the mat, on the canvas, mm-hmm.
yeah.
on the mat, like, looks, I'm kind of watching like nothing because I don't understand the mechanics of it, right? Zack Sabre Jr. showed this to me in a slick pro wrestling way, but it never looks that way in MMA, mm-hmm. right? They're obviously waiting for the exact right moment. They do like the pro wrestling version of it. So they lose grip all the goddamn time, but then they catch grip again. And then the other person's trying to counter and counter and counter. And you get a sequence like what occurred on the floor where all of a sudden Bianca Belair goes for the KOD and it's over that like timekeeper's area. So it looks like Becky's just been draped across the balcony, but it turns out she's found her footing and the sequence continues.
Yeah.
And there was like loads of stuff like that. Neither of them are submission experts, and yet the quest to grab for a hold, in specifically Becky going for the disarmer, results in this just ugly fight, this scrap. I'm not giving you my arm. I'm not giving, oh, God, you've got my fucking arm. I'm not giving you, oh, Jesus Christ, you've got my leg. I'm not giving you my hair. Oh, God, you've got my hair. And on that goes. And it's just this cycle that repeats and repeats and repeats. And it is jockeying for position. It's constant jockeying for position because they're kind of, they're not physical equals, but Becky Lynch knows how to wrestle and wrestle around Bianca Belair's many, many strengths. And what you get is just this luxurious chemistry, the types of which I find it hard to think of like comparisons. I can't think of many wrestlers that don't just bond as well, but bond in the very specific way Becky yeah. Lynch and Bianca Belair do. And yeah, another absolutely tremendous match, a tremendous fight, a gorgeous closing stretch that led to yet again Bianca Belair winning clean as a sheet with her finisher. 2 out of 2 for that
yep.
as well. They're not sort of resorting to laboured 10-minute multiple kick-out sequences. I put this on Twitter along with a lot of other thoughts I had about the closing sequence. But ultimately, a massive, massive star helped make another one. And that is pro wrestling distilled.
Yes, it was just a brilliant match, I thought, to open this show. Played with, obviously, their history together. As you say, Bianca Belair winning with her finish. And then there's a moment afterwards. There's the handshake. I don't know if Becky Lynch is injured. I've seen some images on social media that gets me quite concerned about all that. And then all I thought about was you. Because Bailey's music hits. She returns. In all white.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my yes.
And is then followed by a returning Dakota Kai.
Oh, my God.
And as we've always known her, Io Sky.
Io Sky. Yep.
And returns.
Io Sky.
The first name change in a while that I've been like, yeah, that's kind of fine.
Yep.
Actually, Max Dupri. But that aside, more on him later.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
But they all come out. There's this incredible moment with the five women stood in the ring. Nothing happens, no physicality. We'll probably talk a little bit about it on the Raw preview a little bit later on today. But I just thought, oh, this women's division business is picking up. You had Rhea Ripley looking jacked on the outside for the Judgment Day. It's a mouthwatering prospect, all of this, isn't it?
You have summed it up there. We will talk about this on the Raw preview, right? I'm going to fly all over the shop here because I just obviously, well, sells for the work. I love the f***ing shit out of all of this, every goddamn second of it, right? We will talk about this on the Raw preview. And that is the first tick in the Triple H column, right, for this SummerSlam. How often, and we've said it on podcasts and we've said it on streams, in between you sucking down a jelly, how often have we said that the perfect way to watch WWE is month to month through the premium live
yep.
events because you get the wrestlers? You basically have a look at the board and the chess pieces and you see them. And then you could go, we don't, but you could go, see you in a month, chess pieces. See where you've been rearranged on the board next month, right? Because WWE just operates best that way. The TV is often a drag. It's often a bind. It's often to the detriment of the wrestlers yeah. themselves, right? Not here. Not here. So you were given this incredible, grandiose payoff. I've said this before. This saga was once, in inverted commas, it was a lie. Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair was not a saga. WWE have made it one. The match at WrestleMania was fantastic. Becky Lynch going into a denial spiral after WrestleMania that things were still fine in order to graft her way back to SummerSlam was like really quite astute. and then to bookend this whole thing with a handshake. Like, that handshake, genuinely, you would have felt it too. She puts that hand out. It's a left hand, because whether or not she's selling a shoe injury, who knows. But you're nervous all over again, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, God. She shakes it, and Becky pulls her in for the hug. This has actually been, they've taken something that was pretty at the beginning. There he is, shaking his head. And turned it into something significantly meaningful. You have to really ignore, 3 months of Bianca Belair's 2021 for this to scan, right? But I would say everything pretty much post-Royal Rumble has been this earnest attempt to make Bianca Belair all over again, and it has worked.
And it's not us being too hyperbolic saying this is Triple H's first big moves, especially when it comes to Bayley and stuff, because news reports today saying there was no plan to have Becky turn face.
No.
Until Trips got involved, which is insane.
But. We'd said this before, hadn't we? And more on why that matters later on this card, by the way, in another, let's give Triple H a bit of credit.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. Break the button today.
So, this Becky Lynch turn comes at the exact right time, narratively, especially for where her character has been and where we would assume her character is going. More on that later. Bayley in a stable full stop. Do I want to do that now? Yeah, let's do that now. So Bayley has been off, obviously not in front of a crowd, for 2 years. Was robbed of a pop at WrestleMania. The Bellas were booed for attacking her because Bayley had become the sentimental favourite in the era without fans. And she wasn't given a match, and she was asked to guest host and basically clown around and be the idiot for returning legends and that sort of thing. It wasn't on, and then gets injured 2 weeks before Money in the Bank, right? And it's Bianca Belair. So she returns to face up and front up with Bianca Belair because she hasn't forgotten, because this is supposed to be real. This is supposed to be an emulation of these people's lives, right? So Bayley comes back and it's like, so you think I forgot? It was you I wanted to face in front of all these people. So it's you I'm going to face right goddamn now in front of all these people. She brings with her Dakota Kai and Io Shirai, Io Sky right now. Io Sky has had the call-up, having watched for years, probably, a bunch of call-ups go horribly, horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And as instead, and more will be fleshed out on Raw, you would assume, but hitched her wagon to somebody that has suffered that fate and knows a better way, right? Mm-hmm. Well, she's a good start. I'll get along with her. Right? What can possibly go wrong? Dakota Kai is somebody that has publicly and on Twitter and on social media outside of kayfabe put over Bayley. We see loads of women saying that just what a supporter Bayley is as a trainer, as an inspirational figure, as somebody that constantly tries to elevate. You see it in the matches. She's working for the betterment of all of this. Her and Sasha trying to basically wield tag titles. Millions of Bayley stories. Dakota Kai was released amongst, with all the other wrestlers. Lots of dark times, lots of sad days. And, Bayley's there, throwing out the arm of solidarity to all the women. I want to see these people do better. I want to see these people shine, blah, blah, blah. Do you know another time she said she wanted to see somebody shine? Was when she tweeted that she hoped Liv Morgan had an incredible night at Money in the Bank. And Becky Lynch quote tweeted that and said, well, I'm going to ruin your night then because I'm going to win Money in the Bank. And I also haven't forgotten about the time that you hit me with a chair. You use me to get ahead in your own career. So it made narrative sense of Becky Lynch, not just because she just turned babyface, to stand arm in arm with Bianca Belair, because Bayley was the one that tried to score points 2 years ago when she turned. And they were never able to really revisit that because Becky was on with Charlotte. So even there and then, there was some horsewoman lore that Triple H was able to enjoy because he loves this. He loves this. Evolution 2018, right? We've called for Evolution 2. Why has it not happened? Because he's been nowhere near it. You said it there yourself. A woman's division that suddenly just burst back to life. What happened on his first Raw? Alexa Bliss is like, all of this has been horrendous and I want the title, right? Rhea Ripley is basically the vital member of the Judgment Day. She's without they're a bunch of losers. They suck. Rhea Ripley is the only thing keeping this project together, right? The muscle of the Judgment Day is Rhea Ripley. So a women's division immediately on notice. Bianca Belair is suddenly in the ring. Becky Lynch is the only woman in there that isn't suddenly a threat to a title, basically. Mm-hmm. That's all she can know right now. A series of tag matches. There was a moment, and I said it on the stream, I'm a stinking mark, right? That there's three of them and there's one of her. You were asked to think about the possibility of Sasha Banks.
I thought that.
To make the save. You were asked to think that. You were. And then Becky Lynch is there and you're like, oh, we'll have this instead then. And that goes to one side. That's not an accident. That is not an accident that suddenly it's 3-on-1 and there are two very prominent people that we now know will presumably be having their phones ringing off the hook for a bridge trying to get rebuilt, right? So who knows? I don't know. This is not any sort of insider speculation or anything like that. Who knows? But the potential and the positives were just exploding forth from this scene. And all of this, by the way, was Bayley's comeback. So you get like a minute and a half where Bailey, the reaction is just for her, just for the moment, just for the shock, just for the excitement. And then all of that follows afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not just getting your WWE moment, capital M, TM on the end. You're getting potential things that actually follow on.
Yeah.
The raw... Do you know what this is, Wilbon? Do you know what I want to know after this scene? The fallout. I actually want to know the fallout. We're not just using the word because WWE.com have given us nothing. I want an explanation for the group. I want to know. Dakota Kai, shoot, got her job back. Like, somebody has made a phone call and said, do you want to come back to work?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, yeah, but I mean, look what happened last time. Yeah, we're thinking you and Io Shirai in a stable with Bailey. Well, I'll see you Sunday. Like, they're just... that's a remarkable thing that cannot be slept on here, mm-hmm. that a fired woman was rehired and put in an enormous, like, headline-grabbing attraction day one.
Yep.
Like, what that, narratively in the moment, what that offers is incredible, but what that allows you to fantasy book, like, what's Tegan Nox up to, for example? And that's just, like, that's one, you know, like... Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano both finished, and everybody's talking about, will Gargano come back? Champa's on the main roster, what about Candice LeRae when she wants to? There is precedent set now by these incredible women that take time off to have babies and then somehow commit themselves back to the athletic pursuit of pro wrestling. Don't know how they do it. They're all absolutely incredible. She could be the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would now expect her to re-sign with WWE than go to AEW.
I agree.
If you're Candice LeRae.
One women's division looks very different to the other.
I mean, and even in the Wednesday Night War, when he wasn't getting much right, what was the one thing he could kind of lean on, Triple H? And what, straight away, as he leant back on in his first week in the
exactly.
job. I don't think I've ever really mentioned this before. In a lot of respects, I'm not really Triple H's biggest fan. I think he's probably the best North American women's wrestling booker ever.
Yeah.
I think. I think there's enough evidence to support that statement at this point. And for him to do this in his first week, when he has to be incredibly careful, article coming soon to What Culture about this in more detail, but don't expect the moon on a stick from a Triple H renaissance, because it is so much harder than to just be like, I like this and this is what we're doing, when this company has made money out the ass for years and years and years doing this, right? Not just that, he's got to think about who he alienates. Like, you cannot just, well, I don't like Kevin Dunn, you're sacked. Like, Kevin Dunn will have allies, will have a team. He could alienate the entire production truck. He could alienate Kevin Dunn's other powerful political friends.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be so careful in how he meddles with this. That's to assume that Vince McMahon isn't working as a shadow operative and making calls and being like, what the fuck is that, Paul? Like, do this, do this, do this. He might have that. He might be a shoot theory, sitting there at a table, going, Dad, what have you got for me this week? He's like, well, it's a bad line.
You're breaking up.
What did you say? Rehire Dakota Kai and push her with Bailey and Io Shirai? Yeah, got it. Like, he's got to balance all of that as well. So there's only certain areas where he can absolutely Triple H this out of something. And this, more than anything else on the card, was this.
And I will say, at SummerSlam last year, when Becky Lynch came out and beat her in 26 seconds with the handshake, I did say, let it play out. Oh, look where we are a year later. Adam Wilborn. Vindication! I said it at the time, and everyone said, no, it's a rubbish, bad book in this. Oh, look, a year-long story arc. If AEW did this, you'd be creaming yourselves, wouldn't you? I was right all along.
Imagining, do you remember, this is a dated reference. Remember, kids' TV shows, Blue Peter were big on this. I hated Blue Peter.
Blue Peter,
You know, like, TV shows have totalized as well. Like, the money's being raised, and you see it going up in a little graph, right? I'm sort of picturing two columns, right? The let it play out columns. And, like, here's you on this left. Boop. One. Like, let it play out worked once. And then, like, on the other side.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The millions of let it play out. So it's like, that died on the vine. It's like, yeah, forget about that. Like,
don't concentrate on that.
This one time it worked perfectly.
Also, hate to say I told you so. Oh, no, I don't. Logan Paul was incredible against The Miz. That followed it.
Yeah.
And, also, massive shout-out to Dr. Dana, who provided us... Did you play the game? Who provided us with some lovely bottles of Prime, which Logan celebrated with afterwards. That was the game.
Steve Austin with the beer cans.
Logan Paul versus Pat McAfee for the world title at WrestleMania. There you go. AEW's just shut down at that news.
This was... We'll try and keep this review on the track, shall we?
It's great. I love this.
This was really...
Hello, my balls are massive on his trunks.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Let, can we talk
Maurice?
About... Oh, my God.
Tommaso Ciampa in that green jacket.
Hang on, you pressed it twice.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. They looked amazing. The three of them looked unbelievable. This was... Yeah, I'm going to say it because I piloted this take in the office this morning. And when I wasn't like just burnt to a crisp, I thought, oh, this I can put this out there. I think this might have been the Miz's best match ever. Not to tread on your catchphrase,
Logan Paul is a natural.
Well, Logan Paul is a natural, but cheering him isn't, right?
And until now.
And the Miz. So at WrestleMania, Logan Paul's obviously got a lot of physical gifts that are going to help him in wrestling, right? That frog splash through the table wasn't just brave and bold, but it was also like a real athletic achievement. Like his form was good. Like his body, like he looks amazing aesthetically, but like to hit that frog splash and not look like, I'm going to be cruel, but like, you know, when Shane McMahon just sort of flobs off stuff.
Or when Snoop Dogg tries to do.
Yeah, like that. That's a better example. Like does what we all would do, which is go to your knees and fall forward. got him. Like, he committed to that huge. The table was like, it did that thing where it, like there's a bounce before the break. So like, dunk, and then the table collapses afterwards.
Explodes.
Yeah. So, and there was a lot of that. The Asai moonsault he did in the first couple of minutes, just because like that was another one where you're like, oh man, you're going to try everything to make this work. But the reality of the people that do that, and Shane McMahon would be included, is that often any semblance of psychology is completely reliant on the other person. Like, you've got, the Miz's job here was to be a base for all of these feats of athleticism and show-stealing moments for Logan Paul, and obviously help him get into the positions where they would work, but also to work in such a way where this thoroughly detestable fella, who's really good, as we saw at WrestleMania, at generating the reactions, you know, real life turn up to 11 stuff, the space between, getting him cheered. Mm-hmm. And he did it. So every bit that Miz did here, which I think is like, I would recommend rewatching this and just seeing the amount of times that Miz slows him down and like we say, so let him come. Does that WWE thing of like, I just like, stay patient. Make it, I know you've got like 18 big spots in the chamber, but like just save one for right now. Like his pacing in this was absolutely fantastic. And like, I don't think it'll go underrated because I think people will watch this mm-hmm. and this will be even more the Logan Paul match than the tag match they had at WrestleMania, which credit to him. But I thought the Miz was outstanding here. The Ciampa AJ spot was legitimately funny.
Yeah.
So like Ciampa, no, I'm not going to go.
I'm sitting
like,
right here.
Just a sheer bold-faced petulance on him was like the most main roster thing he's done, and he looked really good doing it. So AJ Styles doing the running, noticeably from the crowd, because it took people about 4 hours to get down that amazing long ramp. So it was good that he came from the crowd instead. That running was really cool. Logan Paul attempting to follow that up with a phenomenal forearm as a, thanks, mate.
He's got friends now.
Well, that was it. Like, it was sort of, that was like just a neat touch in a match full of neat touches. Miz having his own moment on a card as a play to the Pokemon card. And then such an absurd weapon that like, oh no, Maurice, I nearly paper cut that beautiful face. I suppose it was in like a plastic housing, so that would have hurt a little bit. But that was like as funny as it was effective in generating the moment of drama for like Logan Paul to get the win. Logan Paul using the skull crushing finale is great because it puts over the Miz's finisher as lethal enough to put the Miz himself away. Like, there was just a lot of meat on the bone beyond what would be a better example than Pat McAfee, because we're going to get to him later. Like, Bad Bunny.
Yes.
Canadian Destroyer and John Morrison, who is a man that can physically Canadian destroy himself to help Bad Bunny get over, right? Like, Bad Bunny really threw himself into it, did it at the Rumble as well, wanted to get beat up by Brock Lesnar. So he's all in for this sort of thing. But you know what you're watching is somebody that is carefully, like, practiced four pretty awesome moments.
Yeah.
This was so much closer to kind of a complete pro wrestling debut. And it was a singles. This wasn't like the tag. Not that you needed it, but at WrestleMania, the whole point is you could hide it if you need to. Things start going south, just get on the apron, kid, and you know, we'll do
the groundwork. Think about what you're doing next.
Didn't have those advantages here. There was a bit of smoke and mirrors, but not much. No. This was strong stuff. And I don't think Logan Paul's going to be on Raw and SmackDown every week, so you preserve this a great deal longer. They've got a model for this now. Pat McAfee is somebody else that this works for. They've got a model for these wrestlers that are not... The more they're not expected to be weekly characters, the better it goes for them. So Logan Paul should theoretically carry this buzz now for a few months.
Rumble's going to be tasty, innit?
Well, this is it. Maybe he'll work Clash at the Castle because it's a stadium, but I wouldn't expect him as a prominent figure again until the Rumble. And all of a sudden, these special guests, these cameo guys, become Rumble favourites because you might have gone a while without seeing them. And like Logan Paul and Pat McAfee being in that last field of the final 20, all of a sudden becomes a realistic expectation.
And that was followed by just a really cathartic, effectively extended squash. Bobby Lashley ruined Theory. It was for the United States Championship, of course. Theory's got his briefcase. At one point, he teased leaving. And Bobby Lashley was like, I'm not finished with you yet.
Yeah.
Back you get. And there was the tease of Theory potentially stealing one. Bobby Lashley, you know, collides with the ring post. And Theory hits that jumping in the flippy cutter thing. But in the end, it was just a straightforward victory for Bobby Lashley, and that's exactly what we needed.
Yeah, you give this the most generous of passes based on the runtime, I would say. I think this went about 4 minutes, and it only felt that too. Look, Theory's in a feud with like eight different people. It's just a shame none of them are Bobby Lashley, and he couldn't seemingly care any less about the United States title because he's got this briefcase. We knew this would happen. You know, it wasn't a hot take to say that Theory's going to start eating a lot of losses after he won the briefcase.
Oh, and eight now, is he?
Oh, he's something like that. And not even just defeats as well. Like, he kind of each in every single segment he's in because of this briefcase. So this was heatless, but the feud didn't deserve it. And it was kept quick as if that they knew that. I will say this, the psychology of Theory tapping out almost immediately because he's got other plans later in the night, I always quite like.
Yeah.
I like that rule of the wrestler thinking, well, my night isn't over. So why would I call it a night? You know, like,
and remember Edge losing to Flair at New Year's Revolution.
Took a DQ with a briefcase to the face, didn't he? In like 7 minutes or something. So, I like that trick. And had this gone any longer, I'd have maybe been knocked. But there was no reason to get mad.
No, it was great. It was just a nice, just chucking around like an empty tracksuit, as in the words of Adam Nicholas. Straightforward.
Lashley's too over for this, though.
Yeah.
Like, they're again running the risk of squandering him as a babyface because he's too over for this.
Give him something big now for Clash at the Castle. And then it was the Judgment Day versus the Mysterios no DQ tag team match. A little bit of me did go a bit Jim Cornette in terms of, well, if it's no DQ, why the Judgment Day tagging in?
Yeah.
But this again, the match was overshadowed by another, in my opinion, great return. Edge is back, Brood Edge, Short Hair, Flames, sort of... Just
a little bit of everything, isn't it? A little bit of everything.
Kicks Damian Priest's ass on the ramp, spears Finn Balor, then spears Damian Priest. The Mysterios get the win, but this isn't over.
No. Much like the match itself before Edge came out, this isn't over. Really? I don't know what I thought of this. So it was a better call. They said apparently they'd called Edge and said, don't come to Raw.
Yeah.
Don't come out of Square Garden. So you would assume that maybe this would have played out on Raw. As this, and you either announce a tag match with Edge in it, or maybe just it doesn't feature on SummerSlam, and instead they've promoted this match, it gets added to SummerSlam, and you get, you know, I thought the match was nothing, but it existed for two purposes, and those are the only things people are remembering. This is the weird thing about, tried to kind of articulate this at the start of the review, this is the weird thing about WWE versus a wrestling company, is that they're getting to the point where they want you to care so little about the matches that they welcome the silence that greets most of them on Raw and SmackDown as long as you remember the big moments. The Judgment Day and the Mysterios wrestled on Raw. This tag match occurred on Monday and it had a finish. It wasn't even just, well, we're going to have to go again at the we joke about this. Is it going to be TV or is it going to be the PLE? How about both? Because they just give you this had a finish, right? And yet, because it's my birthday, it's not your anniversary, Ray, they have to go again. So the match was nothing. The no DQ existed for the end sequence, which was Rhea Ripley getting involved and Edge returning. But what did people remember? Rhea Ripley getting involved and Edge returning. So on every one of their metrics, this would have been a glittering success.
Yep.
Match was a wash. Match had nothing going for it whatsoever. No redeeming features. Didn't even have as much...
Dominic Mysterio almost got electric chaired.
Well, yeah, he did. But, you know, it wasn't when we called it and it wasn't in the context of which we called it.
Not the same.
As we've always said, it was never going to happen at SummerSlam. There was other business to take care of. This wasn't even as charming as the... Like, there wasn't anywhere near the Eddie Guerrero stuff that made the Monday Night Raw match quite sort of charming on its own terms. This match had nothing going for it. Then Rhea Ripley looked awesome as the muscle of the Judgment Day. And Edge's return went down pretty well with the live crowd. So it's almost like... Hey, you, look over there. Why? Well, we're just doing the boring wrestling stuff. It's the middle word of our company. But here comes the entertainment around the world. Now the other two initials.
I don't watch wrestling for wrestling.
Yeah.
I want to be sports entertainer. I was thoroughly sports entertainer.
That's what this was. I'm not... I don't know. I think Edge is trying, bless him. I don't know how well this latest one is going to work. The studded jacket and the lightning bolt trouser. It was colour coordinated, I suppose. This is very, very... loath as I am to put him over too much, Do you want Chris Jericho? No, we've got Chris Jericho reinventing himself at home. Like, this is Edge's fifth go at a character in like 2 years. And I feel a bit sorry for him for getting chewed up and spat out by the machine, but maybe this one will work.
I think it will. I'm really excited to see what comes next.
Better as a baby, like immediately him as a baby face again. It's like, what the hell were you doing getting him to go to every town and insult the local sports team in a suit? What were you thinking? Like, the poor guy.
Yeah, so much potential though.
I mean, there's a six man in it.
Yeah.
There's a six man in it. Or a six person, I guess. Like Rhea just in the match with them.
Do it. Look at
absolutely, like absolutely wrecking Dominic and Ray.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, let's talk about the star of the show, as always, Pat McAfee. we've lost Seven Nation Army. We've replaced it with another brilliant theme. I love it. He had a choir singing bum-ass Corbin.
Talk to me about what you did when you realised that Corbin's entrance had been stopped for a choir singing bum-ass Corbin, because I thought of you in that moment.
I wondered if this was all a work,
and you were saying, oh man, I'm gutted, I can't make SummerSlam guys over, like, can't do the jelly stuff, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to be away for the weekend, actually. I'm probably not going to be, like, around much on Sunday to talk about the show. We'll have to catch for Monday. I was, like, looking through the, is he in that choir? Is he in that fucking choir? Did he just get himself a plane to Nashville for this?
Popped me huge. And then, yeah, new theme for McAfee, which I also love. I love everything about Pat McAfee. I even love it when he gets up on the top rope and anyone else, I'd go, you be more professional. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, my God.
And it still just nails his opponent.
We're going to do it anyway. And then sent on.
What finish are you going for? Kick him in the bollocks? Kick him in the bollocks, probably.
Yeah.
Corbin was great as well. Great foil for Pat McAfee. And do you want to talk about it now? Because I feel like we'll forget when we get to the main event. Michael Cole is a revelation. He stole this show.
He had a good night, didn't he? Yeah. There, a number of quotables, which is rare for Michael Cole, because typically, obviously, he's just known for, what are all of his colleagues always, when they're putting him over, it's never, oh, he's a great wrestling commentator. So I was like, he's a great traffic cop or something.
Yeah.
The amount of stuff he has to manage on a Raw or SmackDown, it's amazing. It's never, well, did he make you feel anything for the match? Yeah, yeah, the amount of stuff he's got to get across when he's, yeah, but like, did you feel anything for the heel or the babyface? Yeah, man, www.shop.com links and all this sort of stuff. It wasn't so much of that tonight. It just felt like he could call the action. He was good here. Are we getting like him and McAfee versus Graves and Corbin down the line? Because it certainly felt a little bit that way at points. I did love McAfee completely pieing Graves to shake hands with his friend Michael Cole at the end. There was something quite sweet about that. Cole was good in the main event as well. Yeah, so he did have a great night. This was all right.
For the love of God, Count Faster.
He said he called it like the greatest last man standing match he'd ever seen, and he might not have been wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't resist it.
Best one I've ever seen.
It's way up there. But yeah, this was all right. This was, McAfee's flubs were more pronounced, and this is not his fault, but because Logan Paul had a better night.
Mm.
And we've compared, McAfee has been such a breath of fresh air because we compare him to the browbeaten full-time WWE wrestlers. He's like the babyface Shane McMahon.
Mm.
Like, he doesn't get the grief for not working the house shows and not making the towns. We're just like too dazzled by his, he's Arthur Fortune. Mr. Burns, Shane McMahon is, so they're going, what about my money? It's like, no, he's new money. I like him. Out of the way, you.
He's us wrestling, I think. I think that's what it is.
That's a good take,
Forget that he was, you know, an all-star athlete and blah, blah, blah. I see him go to leap up on the top rope, not quite make it, and just sort of land on his knees. And I'm going, go on, you plucky underdog with millions of pounds in the bank.
This was good enough, I think. It was this was a reminder of how well WWE agented this card and this show. The card was never too flabby, really. I think we were saying that we didn't want anything getting added for kickoff's sake. We previewed it and it had, like, or we talked about it at least, and it had like 8 matches by Tuesday. And I just remember thinking, this doesn't need to get any bigger, and it didn't. And there was a space for everything to sort of exist on its own terms. And I like this match as a result. The Code Red Canadian Destroyer thing was horrifying. Like, fair play to Corbin for rotating himself all the way around, because when McAfee slapped that on at the start, I thought, oh, they're both going to die. Cool. And how they managed to get all the way over.
Learning from his match with Cole, basically, at Panama Sunrise.
Legitimately
as well.
Impressive. It nearly brought the sun down on the pair of them. Corbin's character deserves the break that I think he probably should have had after the Madcap Moss one, because he kind of...
It was justified bringing him back for this, I think.
Yeah, I think so, but I'd like to see him get the break. The punt in the nuts was everything it should have been, as a payoff to him suffering it himself. This was good enough. Just about passed. I don't want McAfee to look as wobbly in this. He radiates too cool an aura to be making too many near flubs.
From the star of WWE to the star of the weekend, Jeff Jarrett, who refereed the Undisputed Tag Team title match between the Usos and the Street Profits. Not the way I thought this was going to go, but I'll allow it for a variety of different reasons that we'll get into in a second.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this for maybe the third match in a row. I thought this wasn't much as a match, but the big headlines, the big angles, and the big talking points have given us actual talking points for Monday Night Raw. This would be 3 matches in a row where I felt like the in-ring didn't live up to much, but the memorable stuff was hugely memorable. So, the whole point of the Mysterios and Judgment Day match was to get over Edge's comeback. Think about Edge. The whole point of the McAfee match was to be like, think about McAfee, big moments, big spots, he's a big star. The whole point of this was, astonishingly, to be fair to them, not really to think about the Usos have retained the titles. It was to think about Montez Ford and to think about where the Street Profits are going. And as a result, I think it's all right that the match was a little bit of a disappointment. I don't think it was particularly well worked. I think
they've just done everything they could possibly do.
I wasn't sat here like wishing for, this is the sort of match that yet again makes me want to see just what Usos and the Young Bucks could do. If anything, I was like, I wish the Usos were in a place where they weren't wrestling the same team 100 times.
Yeah, well, Usos better anyway, so it doesn't matter.
They hit you over the head in the first minute. This is it. It was that kind of like...
I like Jarrett squaring up to him.
The WWE stuff, right? It's like, we need at the end everybody to know that Jeff Jarrett is going to call this right down the line. How are we going to do that? Are we going to just pepper in some like little nuanced moments where you can see that Jeff is maybe put... No, we're going to have him physically manhandle one member of each team in the first exchange of the match. There's like no sort of...
There's authority down that boy.
It's like, pulls one of the Usos off, pulls one of the Street Profits off, bollocks them to their face, puts them in their place. It's like, right, forget about that now. We're going to have headlock takeovers and a few high spots for 15 minutes. And then what? Well, the Jarrett stuff's going to matter at the end. All right. Like, so you just, we can just go to the toilet for the full duration of the match. Yeah. Get back for the finish. But Montez Ford sold this really, really well. He was at fault he wasn't at fault. It hurt. His move hurts because he hits it from such an incredible height. But that delay allowed for the kick out. Jeff Jarrett's integrity was never in doubt because of the over-the-top spot we saw in the first minute. And they never once played with that. There was no biases. There was no threat of a guitar shot. He was there to do the job that apparently professional referees can't do, which is referee. Did it. You have the result. And I thought a very effective job of asking wherever next for the Street Profits. Do you know what I thought here, Wilbon? The move, the play, is the Montez Ford heel turn.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be so over as a babyface anyway one day. This was his fault. You have him deluded by reading his own headlines and believing his own BS a little bit. Be like, Angelo, mate, you're just not pulling your weight. And you're like, mate.
And it would get over how underrated Angelo Dawkins is.
And him being like, man, if you weren't so goddamn ostentatious for that From the Heavens thing, couldn't you just hit him with a normal finisher and pinned him? Why does it always have to be about you? Why are you always trying to find the roof in a stadium when there isn't even one there? Like, you don't have to be Montez Ford every minute of the goddamn day. And Montez Ford at this point, lost in how popular he's become and in how all the talking points are about him. Maybe that's what you play with. And he looked livid with everyone but himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the guy, man, like, he just reacted to Jeff and just get on with the job. And he didn't. And he got hauled out as a result.
And he could have, arguably couldn't have, but... the argument is, could he have got in to break up that pinfall? They're both hitting the 1D on Angelo Dawkins.
Yeah. But he'd been,
like, been taken care of on the outside. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see where this goes from. Like, if someone had said these Street Brawlers aren't going to win the tag titles, I'd have said, oof, that's a dumb move. Mm. But we the ones, first of all, obviously. And second of all, I'm so excited to see where this goes from here. And, well, we've got, we all know, I'm going to do this as a brilliant segue. Watch this. We all know who the next tag team champions are going to be anyway. Oh, is it Rey and Edge? No. Oh, is it the Judgment Day? Absolutely not. Oh, is it Maximum Male Models? Congratulations, top of the class. Because I'm not sure where it came in all this. But
that's me shaking a water bottle and not something else.
Yeah, and it's not his bottle just getting wet. Because we're talking about it now. Maximum Male Models did a water advert and it's one of the best things that's ever happened at SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, just hold the finger on the button for an hour.
Mansoir, I'm so pumped.
You absolutely...
And, sorry to interrupt. It's okay. I didn't watch SmackDown, I said. So I was like, I'm happy about this, but it is tinged with like, oh, what could have been? Mm. And then at the last second, just when I think you can't do anything dumber, you go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself. Max Dupree, wee-wee!
Amazing. So glad he's back. The best Triple H call yet, I would argue.
Gang's back together.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. The old days, the good old days, the awesome foursome that is Maximum Male Models.
Jesus. Marseille Mansoir should go undefeated and win the tag titles.
This has to be seen to be believed. We watched it in the office all together this morning, reliving it. And I wanted just another taste because I was flat. Like, I enjoyed the booking of several of these matches, but you're heading for a couple of hours into this show. And I want to reiterate again that, like, to our American listeners, this will be nothing. We met Stu in Texas, and he does this trip just to cover a wrestling show. But to travel halfway across the country and back, I was feeling like the tiredness. I hadn't really slept or anything. And I was worried about like my energy levels for SummerSlam. And this pretty much got me through to the main event. Because, Jesus Christ, Mansoir and Mace being asked to sell water for, what, 20 seconds, 30 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
And doing nearly as good a job as we did of selling cereal. Was remarkable. The bit, there's so many bits, but the bit that stuck out to me at the time was the water over the biceps. So they've drank the water. They've poured the water over the face. They've poured it over the hair as if they're in a shampoo commercial, mm-hmm. Eyes shut, letting it just flow over them like a waterfall. And then you see a close-up of, I think it was it Mansoir? No, it wasn't Mansoir because it was Marseille's muscles.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd sort of like foreshadowed it by opening his shirt up a bit more and pouring it over his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, oh, it's just going to be like, you know, he's like glistening his chest. No, no, it's just all of his muscles. Like he's just covering his biceps in all this water. They do the just married wine glasses bit with each other and they're both no-looking each other. So they're both like staring at you, the viewer, at this point. They're like right down the lens. Oh. They're breaking the Vince McMahon rule of the fourth wall to look at you as they drink water and it misses their mouths and it just
drizzles. They don't know how to drink water either of them.
They can't do it. But by not being able to do it, they do it.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to explain the Rubik's Cube that is a Maximum Male Models, but it's the best thing in wrestling.
Yeah.
I only watched this when we finished because I'm laughing at myself.
It's so good.
At the very, very end, the four of them are all in shot together, and I think it's Max Dupree that Mansoir is looking at. But he walks back into shot, and he's got his glasses, like, over his aviators over his eyes. And then he just tilts his head forward, so they rest on his nose, and he just hard eyeballs Max Dupree, wee-wee. But he's thick doing it. Like, he somehow masters vacant and serious in one incredible look. This is inspired garbage.
Yeah.
It's like God-tier garbage, this.
Speaking of garbage, let's do the bits that I have to mention, but I don't really want to. Kane came out and lied about the attendance.
Oh, what a stupid loser Kane is, man. Kane sucks.
And Kid Rock's golf with someone had flipped off the camera.
That was so weird. Like, I don't know if that's his girlfriend or what. I was led to believe that she was some sort of social media person, but I don't know. But if she's not, she's just his lass. They just started necking on, and then he just flips the bird. It's like, come on, mate. It's 2022. Like, I know you've been chosen as a soundtrack, but hopefully the person choosing you will soon no longer be with the company.
Indeed.
Less Kid Rock in all of our lives, the better. Like, you know, I feel like Partridge when he's talking about, like, I was at Crowded House saying, come back on and play another song. Like, I was once 13 laughing at the swear words on Kid Rock's A History of Rock. You know, I once knew all the lines to the chorus, bar with de bar, de bang, a bang, jiggy. Like, I was,
yeah.
I understood what a great lyricist he was.
Of course.
Those days are over.
But we did get in and around this time incredible memeable content. That was Riddle crashing the party, saying that, you know, despite the fact he'd not been medically cleared,
yeah.
He wanted to be there, and he was going to do this with Randy.
Well, you know what? I was hoping to divorce. Sorry to interrupt. He wasn't that Riddle at all, was he?
Well,
he wasn't that Riddle.
No.
He was Matt Riddle. Like, this wasn't... Benson and Hendrix. It was just, I'm livid and I'm hard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to deck you.
And then Rollins comes out and he's just got Postman Pierce and just everyone. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. And then he runs. And it's been all over social media, the memes that have come out from this. And eventually... stomps Riddle again.
Mm. Solid heat angle. Riddle couldn't get up. You know, they did a good job of selling this. The delaying tactic was a bit... because, you know, it's they had a pay-per-view match and they need it for another pay-per-view instead. And it's like, well, just book better. Just book better. But I thought this was a decent compromise. And a nice... just in general, there was a lot of this on this show. You stuck with the Peacock adverts, unfortunately. But I like things getting broken up with angles or heat or... things that are actually relevant to the shows that we're going to talk about rather than just more adverts. So I like that.
Another match next that was nothing really to write home about, but again, is really good and memorable for me for what it's delivered going forward. It was Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey. Could have done with Jeff Jarrett as the referee for this. SmackDown Women's Championship. And we got to see the Ronda Rousey of old, the edgy Ronda Rousey. Mm. You know, she's being nice to Liv Morgan, but she is going to snap that arm one way or another. And Liv Morgan, hell of an underdog performance, scratching and clawing to get to the ropes each and every time and getting a bit of offense in. But every time that starts rolling, boom, Ronda Rousey dumps her on her head and tries to snap her arm in half. And in the end, Liv Morgan got the pinfall while simultaneously submitting. The referee didn't see it, though. So Liv Morgan retains the SmackDown Women's Championship. And this causes Ronda Rousey to snap, to turn heel, to attack a referee. You mentioned it earlier with Becky Lynch. The pieces are falling into place.
On the same night. Like, I thought this was the worst thing on the show, and yet it featured one of the better bits of booking across the whole night. I thought the match was pretty rubbish. The execution of everything looked pretty lame. They don't have very good chemistry together when it comes to that style that Ronda likes, you know, of constantly working from hold to hold to hold. It just didn't flow very nicely. Liv, I hate it. Like, cardinal sin stuff. A babyface cannot celebrate their way through a slightly ill-gotten victory. No matter how slight or accidental or not their fault it is, you can't do it. CM Punk shouldn't have been booked to do it in that John Cena match where Triple H missed the foot on the... Like, awful WWE thing that just should not exist. So Liv Morgan obviously getting up after the match and surviving the attack and with a smile on her face being like, hey, I'm still champion. That's cowardly. You should come out on Raw or SmackDown and challenge Ronda Rousey straight away. Yeah. The whole reason I wanted this match was to prove I could beat you in a fair fight, and that hasn't happened. We need to go again. Like, that needs to happen because it's just to let it play. Like, for them to cut to Liv and to spend time on her celebrating and toasting this victory, awful. Crap. Don't do it. Bad habit. Ronda Rousey being allowed to finally transition into being a heel again on the very same night that Becky Lynch turns babyface is really cool. The road to WrestleMania has started for the pair of them. They've got the exact same amount of time to explore these new characters that will probably lead us to Royal Rumble season where neither of them have got belts, and then it becomes about, well, I want to go to WrestleMania. Well, I want to go to WrestleMania, and then neither of them are going into title matches, but it's okay because they can go against each other. I'm less sort of convinced now that Ronda will get the belt back from Liv Morgan. I am wondering instead that this will send her on a, like, she's out of title contention because not only is she, like, she would argue the toss for another title shot against Liv, but she's then attacked officials. I wonder if this will... like, they'll say back of the line. And you're like, look, the finish was one thing. We could have easily put you back in place.
Yeah.
But you lost your head. So we can't have that anymore. And because this Triple H thing might come to nothing, but allows you to think that they might think maybe they make her, like, that SmackDown locker room is pathetic. So you can get 8 to 10 weeks of Ronda Rousey just running roughshod through the whole thing. And then, right, finally I've got another title shot. And then she blows it. So then it becomes about the Royal Rumble or something like that. I'm more thinking that her and Becky maybe doesn't need a belt.
Or like you say, you go, we can't justify these actions. You've gone too far now, Ronda. You've taken it to the extreme. And Extreme Rules is after Clash at the Castle.
Yeah, that sounds better, actually. And she's able to put her back in a bit of life right now.
More stables, more women's stables coming your way. And then it was time for the main event that everyone said to me, oh, this can't be as good as WrestleMania 38. And I said, guys, WrestleMania 38 was one of the peaks, obviously. We the ones. Me shouting at some children and stealing their belts. So they acknowledge him.
You like sort of pamphlet. I'm afraid the L that you're going to have to take is so big. I'm delivering it on a tractor.
So I'll admit, I am not a fan of last man standing matches. I've said this a million times. But this, without doubt, is the best last man standing match I've ever seen.
It's way up there. Way up there.
Because it was just, I mean, bombastic is the word. Mm-hmm. He entered on a... Well, he didn't. He entered and then went, one second. Got a tractor.
Yeah.
Came in, stood in the scoopy bit to introduce himself. And you think, well, this has peaked.
Yeah.
It hadn't, by the way. But also, he introduces himself, tosses the mic. Roman Reigns catches it. It's been everywhere.
No look catch.
Roman Reigns, no look catches, winks at Brock Lesnar. Half of the stadium gets pregnant as a result.
I don't think...
And then they just went absolutely bonkers.
There have been a lot of insincere side-by-sides done in wrestling Twitter over the years. The fact that it has been 2 days and I've not yet seen... Because I can't do animated ones. I can do picture ones. I've not seen that lined up with Kevin Nash catching that cup when the NWO are going to attack and just throwing it back. How? Like the two coolest guys ever doing the two coolest things ever.
Someone needs to do that.
Amazing. This match. This goddamn match. I was... Happily, one of the more outspoken. I was dreading this. I was actively dreading this, right? I didn't want to watch the stipulation. I don't want to see these two wrestle anymore. I thought the WrestleMania match was a bit of a sham, quite honestly. And who could have pitched Tractor? Like, this is the thing. Like,
but I said to you beforehand, the Last Man Standing match goes on last, obviously, and it goes 23 minutes.
I know. I'd be absolutely dreading it, right? We all would. We all, oh my God, spear through the barricade, spear. F5, spear, F5, Paul Heyman takes a bump. Like Usos do a run-in. Everything happened. Everything I'm describing happened.
And the thing is, when he comes down with that tractor, I go, yeah, very nice. Yeah. But, I mean, what's your strategy here? You're not going to be able to use it.
Well, right up to the point where... So he puts Roman in the is it a bucket, is it called?
Yeah.
Right? He puts him in there, and it's going up and up and up. And I'm thinking, well, this is the best bit. Because when he falls out... You can't make it noisy, and you can't go so high that he puts him in at risk. So it's going to be from a reasonable height, and then he's going to just like slop to the ground. It might be funny, but it's not going to be impactful, right? And it was that, wasn't it? I think like the fans even kind of got up for it, and then were a bit like Roy Hodgson that when he just like he slumps out the butt. But like him going up there in it is funny.
It's a great visual.
Like these toys are going to get made, aren't they? The kids at Christmas are going to be playing with their Brock Lesnar in a tractor, lifting Roman Reigns up in the thing. Right, that's going to
first one I actually approve of.
Right, that's going to happen. So you're like, oh, yeah, and that is suddenly the best thing you can do with it. And then he does what he does with the ring. And first of all, Roman being tipped out of it is absolutely bloody hilarious.
Yes.
And like the exact right amount of terrifying, because you'd like to think he's got an element of control, but all of a sudden he is just, we're kids rolling down a grass bank.
Like that's, yes.
The ring is now a grass bank and he's going like that. He can't stand up in it and he's on the floor. So he's rolling and hoping that when he lands on the floor, it's going to work out all right. The first bit where he pushes the ring.
Well, I thought that was it.
Well, yeah. And
I thought he was going to move the ring and then they're going to be like, oh, he's exposed the floor and there's going to be like an F5 onto it.
And
I thought, well, okay, there's
Michael
something.
Cole does that call like that time that you and Phil nearly had the cameras fall on you. Jesus Christ! Like the ring coming at you. Like, must have been... He called it like it must have felt. The ring is coming towards you and you have no control over where that thing is going to go. Amazing. When he lifts it, and it just sort of stays there because there's a giant thing underneath it. Obviously, we know everything will have been preset to it. But this is better than the exploding rings.
Yes.
This is better than the exploding rings because it looks legitimate because there's a giant big clump of metal holding it up. It doesn't look like that some stagehands have carefully positioned one of the corners to be spring-loaded. This looks real. So, like, they then cannot wrestle in it. So if you see the phone footage of Brock Lesnar, he climbs back to that corner to say, thanks very much, fans, or whatever. That in itself is a struggle because you're at like a 45 degree. I can't stop looking at it. I'm just staring at the chaos and the devastation. Everybody is. Everybody knows that can picture the visuals. You're all picturing your favourite one at the moment. They're fighting on the floor, and the background is the ring. Because it's up there. The whole thing is coloured. Like, the frame is coloured the colour of the canvas. It's like this white and blue wash. Like, you know the Truman Show's cardboard sky? That's this, like, just this background, this, like, stable physical object that these men are trying to fight around. And then when you're thinking, well, they've only got this, like, narrow space with which to fight. Like, I'm jumping ahead in your recap. Theory comes out to cash in, right? And they've only got this narrow bit to work with. The cameraman appears to be positioned in that little timekeeper's area. So the thwack on that briefcase to Roman is brutal. The super kicks that they hit Brock with look like shoots. I'm sure they weren't. You know, they're like, they've hit a million of these super kicks. They're not to measure it. But they look like they've just like clobbered him for real. And then Brock, like, breaks the table with Paul Heyman's head. Like,
it was such a good bump.
That wasn't such an F5. It was more like Heyman was, like, having to burrow into it. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, he just did not move, and that was great as well. Like, I love the, like, there's a real, like, art to the physical comedy of, like, body laid flat, yeah, right? Just, like, arm splayed out over your leg over here, not moving for a good 5 minutes. There was a risk of the end getting flabby because you've seen the best bit. The ring is tipped, like, no spear, F5, whatever, is going to be quite as good. As fun and wacky as all it was, as the ring being tipped. But I did quite like, well, pile all the, like, detritus on top of it.
It was so good.
The one thing it missed, Phil called this on the stream, the one thing that would have made that finish even better was Theory being used with the desk.
Oh, and that would have been great.
It's like, what can we throw on top of Reigns? Oh, there's, like, Theory's broad body. Put him on the pile as well. Let's set fire to it while you're at it and just see what happens. See if that keeps this beast down. They did what was theoretically impossible, which was create the illusion that this Brock Lesnar that has now been beaten, like, clean by Roman, but beaten enough times that for one night they made him feel like that unstoppable monster again.
Hmm.
This was amazing. This was like I don't know, I'm curious what Dave Meltzer will give it, but this to me felt like kind of like 4¾ star.
Yeah.
Sports entertainment.
Yeah.
You are almost hitting the very best of what you as WWE can do.
I've never enjoyed someone going through an already broken table
more. Oh, man, the broken table stuff was fantastic.
Brock Lesnar's back getting cut up.
Like, Roman using it as if it was a chair. Like, that bit of table where he just, like, he could hold the leg but hit with the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new perfect weapon because you can swing it with the hand, with the chair, mm-hmm. with the table leg, but the impact is, like, all flat. So it's just a bit of wood, but because it's jagged on the side, it looks so much more dangerous. Mm-hmm. It looks like, it feels chaotic. It doesn't feel fake.
Getting slammed back when he got slammed through the table that had already been broken.
Oh, this was really good.
It was amazing.
It was really, really amazing.
So just to talk you through what my experience of watching this as well. I'm watching this on my laptop with my headphones in. The missus is catching up on Love Island or whatever it was. And she's glancing over and over every now and again when I'm going, oh, bloody Bailey's come back. Oh, it's Edge or whatever. Yeah. And I jumped out of bed when he lifted the ring. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah.
I think I said, this is the greatest moment in Last Man Standing match history. The bump happens. And like you say, they've already clonked each other with, you know, stairs and chairs and F5s and spears and all that. And they've done all, like, genuinely good. I'm just getting back to my feet. Not just like, oh, I've been hit with a transitional move. And yeah. Like, genuinely, like, wobbly-legged, Roman always just making it and then immediately collapse into the ground or just roll into the outside because he lands on his feet, technically, and then, oh, down again. You get the theory thing and everyone goes, oh, bollocks, and that's immediately, don't worry about that, that's definitely not happening. And the Paul Heyman bump, the thing that people have pointed out where one of the Usos sort of suplexes his own brother to help Roman, right? To help Brock Lesnar do that to them. But yeah, Brock Lesnar just gets super-kicked and then goes, okay, well, you can have some receipts for that. Boom. Takes all them out. And then, yeah, the finish, which is just, I'm going to wail on you with this briefcase. Right, that's not worked. Michael Cole putting in one of the performances of his life here. I'm going to clobber you with the belt. I'm going to clobber you with another belt. And then I'm going to chuck everything I can find. There was a bit, I watched it again this morning. So they chuck on, like, there's a bit of table. And there's a chair, and there's some stairs, and then there's the big bit of table, and then there's some more stairs, and Roman stands on top of it, and blah, blah, blah. There was a bit where Roman just put a box. It was like, I'm not sure if it was one of the video boxes or just a box. And it was like, that wouldn't pin anyone down. But he was like, I'll take anything right now. Anything within my grasp.
Barricading a door from a killer in a film. Yeah, anything in front of the door.
Yeah. Put it on top. The visual of him standing and you just see like Brock's legs sticking out from the bottom. Him standing there with all the belts and the pyro going off. I did like Drew McIntyre's little bit with the kid as well, by the way, earlier. That's just reminding me.
Oh, yeah, he got that chump for that kid, didn't he?
Yeah. And he stands there and Paul Heyman's like, bloody hell, lads, I don't know what's going on here. Fantastic ending. The only thing I want to add to what you said, because I just want to heap more and more praise on this, and I'm probably going to go back and watch this match. Mm. And how many times have you said that about a Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar match outside of WrestleMania 31, basically? Yeah. Did you notice the LTST?
No, hit me with this. I'm excited for this.
I'm astonished no one has picked up on this on social media.
Okay.
And I have a feeling that if I do tweet this, people are going to be like, reach in, Mark, or whatever. But I mentioned it. We're going to circle back to it. So he's hit Brock with everything, like you say. And he's got the Usos involved, and Paul Heyman's then been going, there you go, take both belts, just don't kill him, please.
Yeah.
He hits him with the briefcase, and he thinks, right, that's got to be it. And he gets up, and he hits him with the WWE Championship, and that doesn't put him down, so he has to resort to his precious. Because we know how he feels about the WWE.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
WWE Championship. It's a nice trinket to have, but remember when he went, piece of crap.
Yep.
The Universal Championship is his thing, and he's like, I've got to resort to using
this. That I've had for 700
Go
days.
Back, leave us alone, never come back. This is my yard now. This is my title. I've held this for like 700 days.
Today, as we record, 700
Boom!
Days.
Boom!
Nice. Oh, that's very good. That's a good detail. Because that tossing away the belt thing.
But if it was Kenny Omega who did it, I mean, all over. No, I'm joking.
You told us about this morning, and I said, well, tell me on the podcast then. And a little bit of then I think, oh, God, this is going to be a bit. And he's going to be like, and Roman did a fart and ran away. No, I'd give you that. Because when he threw that belt away, he pulled such an expressive face that he left you with a memory of it. And it was hard then to sort of... He wants to take that off Brock just to take it off him rather than to have it. And yeah,
dude, which belt does he always want Heyman to hand him?
It's the distinction between the two that is important, and I like that. And it's all the more if and when they do separate them, why they can kind of have the cake and eat it, because you can keep this reign going for Roman without him feeling like, are they going to just say for the WWE title? We were very clear about that. A Clash of the Castle for the WWE title.
The Universal Championship, of course, as we all know, only ever defended in America. What about the Saudi? Only ever in America.
Yeah, honestly, they could be like, well, that's my precious. Like, Roman, I don't care about your 700 days. I care about that thing that you're not taking seriously. Mm-hmm. You were willing to just throw that around in a match with Brock Lesnar. I carried that around as a symbol when you were nowhere near this company, yeah. Roman. There's somewhere they could go with this. Maybe there's something to it. The match was excellent.
So what you're saying is you finally have had to acknowledge him.
Yeah, but I think I'm worried that him might be Triple H.
Triple H here is here, baby.
It was a really good night. It was a good night to be Triple H, because regardless of how the show went, he was going to be the one that would be shouldering the blame or the acclaim, and he's come out with way more of the latter than the former. So, look, I cannot wait for Raw to pick up on a lot of the things, like a lot of these threads that were dropped on this show, and that's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is genuinely an achievement in and of itself of an otherwise, like, strangely enjoyable card.
Indeed. Well, let us know your thoughts on SummerSlam on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcasts, we're going to be reviewing AEW This Is Rampage, baby, a little bit later on. And, of course, looking ahead to all the SummerSlam fallout on the Raw preview. But for now, this has been the SummerSlam review. My thanks to Michael Hamlet. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.